I missed that, David. What were you saying?
I'm playing football. I mean, I don't really understand it. I don't know why so many people around the world love it so much.
I think it might be, David, because that's not football. It's a butternut squash.
Well, who says? I mean, that's just your opinion.
Well, the clue's in the name. Okay, so football's called football because you use a football and you use your feet. Thank you very much. It's a very silly illustration, isn't it? It could be realistic because David's a Formula One fan, so he doesn't have very much idea about football. My experience as a church minister is that many people have done that with Christianity. They've taken Christ out, just like taking football out of football. People have taken Christ out of Christianity, and I don't blame people for that. Often it's because people just don't know. Apparently, the average school child doesn't even know one single story about Jesus. So, you know, that might be why. It might be because church ministers like myself make it all a bit confusing, and well, churches muddle it all up. But I just wonder, maybe that's why most people you meet aren't particularly interested in Christianity. Because I'll tell you a secret, if you take Jesus out, I wouldn't be interested either. The verse doesn't say, if you look at it, it doesn't say for me to live is certain rules. You know, don't drink alcohol. Don't have any fun at all. As if the message is just try hard and you can somehow earn your way with God. That's not the message. It doesn't say for me to live is ceremonies. Certain special clothes to wear, candles to light, christenings. You'll notice we don't have that sort of stuff here. It doesn't say for me to live is church buildings. A pastor started being sent postcards from members of the congregation from their holidays, and they didn't know what to send him, so they sort of sent him pictures of churches. You know, he's a minister, he must like that. Eventually, he stood up in front of the church and he said, "Look, I'm so grateful for these postcards, but I really don't like church architecture at all. Please send me pictures of something else." It backfired. And for the next 35 years, he was sent nothing but pictures of little churches. Christianity is not about certain rules or ceremonies or church buildings, simply Christ. And that's why the whole focus of the Bible is on Jesus. If you've never picked it up before, that's the message. He's the hero. Jesus is the hero. And it's why early Christians, authentic, you know, first Christians, said things like this: for me to live is Christ. They were really clear. It meant that actually non-Christians around used to say as an insult, "You're Christ ones. You're so into Jesus, we're going to call you Christ ones." That's where the term Christian first came from. It was an insult. I wouldn't mind if that's how people in Lansing think of the tap. And so one of the things we're trying to do here, if you want to get a bit of a feel for us as a church, is we're just trying to keep things quite simple. Christianity's simple. Second, it's wonderful. Now, I wonder what you would say life's about. For me to live is. Just put a few ideas there. For me to live is, well, I think I would have put sport, actually. I haven't put that on there. When I was a teenager, that would probably have been the thing. Natasha kindly shared some of the things that she was living for. You know, maybe for you it's for me to live is money, or health, or my mates. For me to live is helping other people. Education, food, drink. For me to live is my image, sex, Facebook, my kids. For me to live is work, respect, parents. For me to live is gaming. I don't know. These are all good gifts. Now, what would it be for you? What's number one? If you've watched the 7, 14, 21 up BBC program following the lives of people born in 2000, it's very striking how each one of the children very clearly lives for one of these things. I suppose we all do. COVID has just started to get us thinking, hasn't it? A little. Some have started to value family a little bit more, or old friends that you've connected with on Zoom. I guess we all take our health for granted a little bit less. Lots of people have changed jobs because they want to do something that really helps people rather than just focuses on money. We all know, don't we, that there are some things that are better and more healthy to live for. Christians have just found that Jesus Christ is the very best thing of all. He's wonderful to us. I know that may sound a little bit weird, so let me just try to explain very briefly why. First, he's Lord. Now, Christians are convinced that Jesus is God, the God who made the world, stepping down into human history so that we can really know him in the way that Natasha spoke of. And we're convinced of that because he taught with such wisdom that it just made sense of life. And it was as though he was the one who designed human life. He acted with such goodness and honesty and purity that people just saw in him the sheer perfection of God himself. He treated people with, you know, even outcasts and the abused, the prostitutes. And Jesus walked around and he treated them as though they were his own family and as if he had handmade them. And he did things never heard of before or since. He'd heal instantly someone who was paralyzed or blind from birth. He'd walk into a funeral and say to a dead corpse, "Get up," and he'd restore it to their families. He'd multiply a couple of crusts of bread and feed huge crowds of thousands of people. He'd still a storm with a word. Now, you need to make up your own minds who Jesus is. It'd be a great thing just to go away and read a little bit of the Bible and try and work that out. But if Jesus is Lord and God, then when Christians say, "For me to live is Christ," we are just putting at the center of our lives the one who actually is the center of life, right? God himself. We're not just enjoying God's good gifts, but we're enjoying him. And so you wonder if life has any meaning. You found all other things satisfy for a while, but then they start to fade and change. You feel a great emptiness. You long for something bigger. And Jesus Christ says to you today, "How about me? How about me?" If we all have a God-shaped hole within us, why not put God in rather than trying to stuff it full of so many other things? That's the wonderful invitation of Christianity. And because Jesus is Lord. Second, he's living. Of course, if I was to say, you know, to live as Julius Caesar or to live as Winston Churchill, it would be bizarre because they're dead and gone. But the Bible teaches that Jesus didn't stay dead, but he rose and he's living today. I studied engineering at university and I'm interested in hard facts. And I'm persuaded, as nearly 2 billion people around the world are, that Jesus really rose in history. And there's good evidence for that. You may not believe that yet. Do you know, Paul, who actually wrote this, didn't. He spent his life rounding up Christians. He hated them, and he rounded them up to get them killed and locked up because he thought that Jesus was fake news and dead news. And then he met the risen Jesus. And you know, the same could happen to any of us today if we're willing to look again. I'd love to invite you on a Christianity Explored course. Natasha mentioned Christianity Explored. I'm going to mention a little bit more about that at the end. But that would be a great place on Thursday evenings just to start to say, okay, is there anything in this? I can ask some questions and explore. Jesus is Lord. He's living. I'm just sketching this out. There's so much more I'd love to say. But maybe above all, he's loving. So you might say to me, well, you know, maybe, okay, so maybe Jesus is God. But what's God ever done for me? And you need to know that there are stories in the Tab Church family of great disappointments too. And of prayers that we've prayed over the years that Jesus hasn't answered. But when we ask the question, what has God ever done for us? We go to the cross. Though Jesus lived the perfect life, he was arrested, lied about, tortured, and then butchered on a Roman cross. And the Bible says he did that deliberately for you and for me. Looking on to the next chapter in this book of Philippians, it says Jesus humbled himself and became obedient to death. Even death on a cross. And Jesus said he hadn't come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a radical rescue for many. We've just loved moving to Lancing. It's an amazing place to live. Our one negative is that the council haven't yet given us a bin. So every Sunday morning, I cart down to church to dump in the big wheelie bins out there, with permission, our family rubbish. And you can imagine, with nappies and chicken carcasses and things and no bin collection at our house, it can get pretty nasty. I'm slightly embarrassed, actually, even just bringing this into church. Imagine inside this bag wasn't household waste, but the rubbish of our lives. I don't know about you, there'd be some good bits that I'd love people to see. But if I included all my thoughts and words and imaginations, there'd be some shameful, dirty bits that I'd love to keep sealed from the world. The hateful, angry, selfish, lustful moments. Even if we haven't had a story as colourful as Natasha's, we each of us know that there are all sorts of things in our lives that we'd hate other people to see, let alone the ways that we fall short of God's absolutely perfect standards, that we know in our best moments, I should do better. Now, the Bible says that one day we will have to carry our great load to God's judgment. And he knows exactly what's in there. But at the cross, Jesus takes that for us. I was going to pour out the contents, but I realized I'd make an enormous mess. I want you to imagine that all the piles of the rubbish bins of the world and the horrors were piled out on Jesus as he died on the cross. That's what the Bible says. He took the death and the horror and the judgment that you and I, actually, honestly, we do deserve. And Jesus wonderfully carried that for us in our place, in love, so that we can be completely forgiven, welcomed, loved completely by God. What has God ever done for me? He's done this. He's Lord. He's living. He is loving beyond any human love that we ever experience. And you know, when someone experiences that love, it's no hardship to start to say, as Natasha did, for me to live as Christ. It's no hardship for me when I started to get a sense of what this God had done for me. It's a wonderful thing. What have we seen? Christianity is simple because it's about Jesus. It's wonderful because it's about Jesus. It's radical because it's about Jesus. And Paul says on the verse, for me to live is Christ and to die is gain. That's radical. It's radically personal. There might be someone whose wife or husband follows Jesus, or someone whose mum and dad follow Jesus. Can you say today, for me to live is Christ? No one else can decide that for you. It's public, isn't it? It's to live is Christ. So it's not somebody who says, well, you know, I think there probably is something up there. I tick Christian on the census. No, to live, the whole of my life is suddenly transformed by Jesus. We're studying as a church right through the letter of Philippians where this is taken from. You'd be really welcome to come and join us on another week. And we're seeing that Jesus calls us to be citizens, not just of this world, but citizens of heaven, radically humble, content, patient, kind, gentle, courageous, like he is. Personal, public. And there's something very profound here, isn't there? To die is gain. Christians deeply value this life. And so we're really thankful to God for the vaccination. We've prayed much for our nation and for human life. But because Jesus died but then rose again, we know that this life isn't all there is, and that what is to come is better. So the Bible ends with a lovely description. The dwelling place of God is with people, and he will live with them. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There'll be no more death, or mourning, or crying, or pain, or we could add isolation, fatigue, mental health issues, fear, ventilators. There'll be no more of that, for the old order of things is wiped away. And the man who wrote this was looking forward to that when he said, to die is gain. Here's a letter written by a Christian couple, some friends of Tess and I, who are in their 30s. And she's dying of cancer. And they write, "We remain steadfast in our hope, which is not in this world, but in the one to come. This life is lived in a world where there are sorrows and struggles, but it is only temporary. We believe in the resurrection and the life everlasting." Well, I wonder, can you say the same? Have you got that radical hope that meant that Paul, even in prison, could have a measure of joy? I have to say, friends, I don't think you can get this anywhere else. Only if you can say, to live is Christ, the one who's uniquely smashed death, can you say, to die is gain. And I think this last year has surely illustrated the need for that sort of hope. We're going to close with a song, and then I'll tell you what's happening next.